Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online and you want to join us live on the call itself, pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. There's still lines open if you're on the call. You might want to jump in now and get your question, comment, or topic lined up. We are going to be doing a recorded hour for the SiriusXM show, so it's all questions and answers. This is your chance to get through. Press 1 on your phone right now, and Lisa will screen your calls, and we're just going to jump right into it tonight and get right into the questions. Again, if you want to join us, 347-884-8327, and once you're on that call, press 1, and Lisa's screening those calls right now, so let's get right to it. Good evening, and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford, and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. The important stuff, well, that's your phone call, so let's get right to it. Let's start off tonight in Indiana. Matt, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, Kevin.
Hello there. What's on your mind tonight?
I've got a quick question about a transmission. I'm going to be needing to replace the one in my truck here soon. And it's a RTX 14710B. Have you heard of such of a transmission?
You know, I almost have to go look at the list. What year is it?
I don't know what the year is. The final drive is a 0.74, and it's at 1,400 RPM. It's supposed to be running 65 mile an hour with the 24.5 low pro. And I just want to get your input.
0.74, as far as the final ratio itself, that's pretty standard. That's the traditional, you know, overdrive ratio that we run. It's really that you've got two overdrive gears, so we could call it a double overdrive. Probably got either 0.85 or 0.86 and that 0.74.
Okay. Would that be a good replacement, you think? Or
give me the specs on the rest of the truck.
Okay. It's a, like I say, it's a 98 International. It's got 373 rear end. And right now it's just got a 9-speed Spicer in it. And so, like right now, when I'm going 64 mile an hour, I'm right at 1500 RPM. So I'm kind of high on the RPM.
Okay. And what's your operation like?
My operation is I'm leased to a major carrier, hauling dry van freight.
Okay. Yeah, that's going to be a good replacement. It's going to give you some more options, a couple more steps, obviously, on the way up, and a slightly higher final ratio than what you've got now.
Right. The reason why I was there was because it's more cost effective to purchase that transmission than it would to go like a double over 13, which would be considerably more. And
how much are you getting this one for?
It's probably right around $5,200 for install and everything.
Okay. All right. Both Eaton and Meritor and Rockwell, and they made so many transmission models. And there's a way to tell, you know, what every one of the letters and the numbers means, but I just don't have it up in front of me right now. But as far as the final ratio goes, it's going to be a good transmission
for
you.
Okay. Yeah. The other thing, too, was Joe at Western Truck Parts in Denver, or Henderson, he's real helpful, a real nice guy. Glad to spend the time with you to take care of your business.
Yeah, they are great out there. We need to get them back on the show just to talk to them about some of this stuff because that's what they do every day.
Yeah, I told them about Bruce and stuff, and then they got all excited. All hell broke loose.
Oh, yeah. Bruce and those guys go way, way back. They're great friends. And Bruce, he spends some time out Denver. He loves ski in the wintertime. When he lands, you know, they either pick him up or he parks his truck out there at their place, and they've got some stories to tell.
That's good. Well, I appreciate the info, and thank you for your time today.
All right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to, you know what, speaking of Bruce, I spent some time with Bruce on the phone today, and one of the things that they have improved on dramatically at Pittsburgh Power is the ability to reflash the ECM on the Cat Bridge motor specifically. I think they've got it down to 2 days, and I can't remember if we talked specifically about price, but I know they've cut the price almost in half from whatever they were doing it before, and they can make significant improvements in the performance and fuel economy of the bridge motor by reflashing the ECM. So if you've got that Cat Bridge engine, which would be most of the 03, if you're going to have a bridge, it's probably going to be an 03. Give Pittsburgh Power a call and talk to them about it, because I know they've been working pretty hard on that. I think the next thing they're working on is being able to do that with the 6NZs and the 5EKs as well, improving some of those ECM settings. Let's go to Norman in Ohio. Welcome to the program.
I got a great idea for a fuel economy improvement, but it's a little out there, so I want to run it by you.
Well, you know, sometimes I like out there. Sometimes when we start with out there, it leads us down a path that gets us to something we hadn't thought of before. So hit me with it.
What would happen if I dropped all the gear oil in all three of my gearboxes and replaced it with 5W40 full synthetic motor oil instead?
You know, we've had some discussion about this, and I need to get with people on the website are very familiar with Eldon. He does a lot of research for us, really good on mechanical stuff. There was, I'm trying to remember, he did a lot of research on this, and there are some possibilities there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember right, it's we could do it maybe in the transmission, but not in the differentials. And I'm not even sure on the transmission if we could go all the way to 540 or not. So there has been some thought along those lines, and I it's, you know, one of the things on my list, and I meant to do some more research, and I know Eldon had some ideas for me on that. So I'm gonna look back into that again, because there was some potential there. I just don't know all of the issues and exactly what weight we could go down to in those components.
Is Eldon active on the website?
He is very active on the website. So you could certainly catch him most nights in the chat room, or you can send him an email, and he will respond to you.
I will hit him up.
There you go.
Hey, since the cold weather has started, I've been having some dead battery problems, and I've narrowed it down to I'm fine overnight, but two nights, no, I have to idle. So I've got all four new batteries. I've got a 200-amp alternator, but the way my operation works, I tend to do my 34-hour restart on the weekends. So now that the weather is getting colder, I'm one of those bad boys that's sitting there at the truck stop idling simply to keep my batteries charged up. So I was talking to a mechanic about adding a second set of batteries so I won't have to do that. But then he says, well, you'll have to add a second alternator. What do you know about that?
No, that's not true. What do you have an inverter on this?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so you're probably running the batteries down with the inverter, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, there's a couple things we can do. The second set of batteries, I would make them deep cycle.
Okay.
You may want to look at the Optima batteries. And deep cycle batteries are designed to be drawn down and recharged, and glass mat batteries even more so. They're designed to be drawn down and then recharged and drawn down and recharged, where lead acid batteries with cold cranking amperage, really, they're not. They're designed to give you that one big shot, and we really don't draw them down. So now on the other side, The problem with the deep cycle batteries is that we really shorten their life because we don't charge them properly, and part of it is the alternators that we use in this operation. They're not designed to charge those kind of batteries thoroughly. So in an operation like ours, we tend to kill those batteries early. They work better, but we tend to kill them early. So Unfortunately, our electrical systems just haven't been designed very well to handle the kind of hotel loads that we're now putting on trucks with TVs and microwaves and coffee makers and computers. And so there are a couple ways around this. You don't need a second alternator, though. One alternator can be used to charge both sets of batteries. It's not the perfect solution, but it's good. We just haven't really designed the best solution for a truck yet. But I'm having somebody on the show here real soon that's going to give us a good education on some of that stuff. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, if you're listening to us online, there are still some lines open if you want to jump in and join us on the call itself, 347-884-8327. And we are doing a recorded hour for Sirius XM tonight, and we have a lot of room for questions yet. So if you've had problems getting through before, now is your chance. Some availability left for questions, so press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen your call. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, just want to jump in and join us, press 1 on your phone right now, and this is your chance to get through. All right, we're going to start back to the recording. Here we go. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's go to South Dakota. Jimmy, welcome to the program.
Jimmy the Junk Man checking in. Kevin,
hey,
this
there.
Is my first time on the podcast. It's kind of exciting. I'm expanding my technical horizons.
Great to have you here. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I was just tuning in, and I heard the question about the battery system.
Yes.
I just installed a second set of batteries with the isolator block, like in an RV setup.
Yes.
And I used the same alternator, and your alternator produces plenty of electricity as you're going along through the day to fill up 8 batteries, no problem. And then I shut off at night, and I can use my coffee pot and my microwave oven and all that kind of stuff. I still have full crank power in the morning. Now, I just, you know, I'm just kind of experimenting here, so I didn't go to the deep cycle batteries. I just got the, you know, four junkyard batteries, and I've been doing fine like that.
You know, there's a couple ways to go about this. The golf cart batteries work really well. In the last RV we were in, we had 4 6-volt deep cycle golf cart batteries that were wired into a 12-volt configuration. That's one way to do it. The new glass mat batteries are another way. They are significantly more expensive, though. The glass mat batteries are quite a bit more expensive.
I heard somewhere, might have been on the weekend show, that you can get these marine deep cycle batteries secondhand because they really need them to be in top-notch shape when you're in a marine application. So they're always pulling them out when they still have plenty of life left on them. And then you can buy them for, you know, scrap price and then use them as your second set in the truck.
I do remember that call, and that was interesting because I didn't realize that, and that may be a great way to go when you're using them as a second set of batteries in the truck. That was really a good idea.
Yeah. Another topic, this stupid government logbooks and how the companies and the carriers set up the freight logistics. They've been making me drive a lot faster than I need to drive, and I hate it.
Yeah, that's bad. That's not a direction we need to be going in.
Yeah, and you know, this whole logbook thing, it's all about safety, and here I am, you know, mashing the motor, and
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is. You know, we certainly have some conflicts. You know, when you look at, you know, CSA 2010, and then we look at new hours of service, and then we look at electronic logs, then we look at the fact that the government's going to be pushing for fuel mileage standards on trucks. There's a lot of conflicting things going on in there.
Yeah, if they just leave us alone, I could decide how to make the decisions regarding my own business.
Absolutely.
And I'd do better.
Hey, you know, while we were on the battery thing, I'm gonna remember it. I was in the forums today, and I happened to notice there was a truck stop that had put some stuff in the forums on the website, and they were just talking about upgraded, you know, services, and it was actually a pretty good article. They were asking for feedback, or a good discussion. They were asking for feedback from the owner operators, and they have a new system that looks similar to Idleair. What was the name of it? Oh, I just can't remember the name. They're up in the Northeast. They had a location in New York somewhere.
Oh, yeah. There's one in Connecticut. I heard about it. And
you come in,
you shut your truck off, and then you plug into this system. It's like Idleair, and you're not allowed to run the truck. The truck stop owner was facing a shutdown from the local government and the local citizens, so he has this system in place, on his own nickel, and then he has a little guy in a pickup truck bombing around the parking lot. Anybody who doesn't shut their truck off within several minutes, you know, gets a stern talking to.
Yeah, this one, and that might have something to do with this. This particular truck stop in New York was offering this service free.
It's a free service. Service. It's the one in Connecticut. It's a free service, and they get on. They don't shut your truck off in time.
The other interesting thing was they had the kind of the full blown system where you stuck the vent in your window, just very similar to idle air. So you got, you know, hot and cold air, but they also had just the post kind of thing with 30 and 50 amp plug-ins, just like RV for shore power. And I thought years ago that was the direction we should have gone in, was just a pure shore power setup. And then when you talk about having the second set of deep cycle batteries, if the electrical system is properly designed and you're plugging into shore power on a regular basis, your batteries last forever because that's the way they should be charged. The alternators, even though they have a lot of power, they're not charging the batteries exactly the way they should be done. And shore power really keeps them in good condition. So I thought it was interesting that they were installing, you know, that this company that makes the equipment also had this option for just power, not hot, cold air.
Yeah, I'd love that because I've been shutting the truck off for years, and I won't run it unless it's, you know, 10 degrees or below.
Yeah.
And I just hate pulling into a truck stop now because I'm going to have a guy idle side to me.
Yep.
I got the noise and I've got the, you know, toxic fumes I got to breathe in.
Absolutely. And you know what? We're out here doing the same thing. We're parking at the truck stops every night, and pretty much every night anyway. And it's the same thing. I mean, it's getting down into the 30s, and I'm just as comfortable as can be sleeping without anything running at 30 degrees. And I could probably make it down to that 10 mark myself. I'm just surprised how many trucks I still see idling. Let's go to Indiana. Matt, welcome to the program. Let's try Pennsylvania instead. Jay, welcome to the program.
Howdy, Kevin.
Hey there.
I wanted to ask you about nose cone on a van trailer and rather than a a visor on top of the cab. Do you think the nose cone would help me as far as fuel mileage aerodynamics?
Are you saying one or the other?
Yeah, I have a mid-roof Western Star, so my roof isn't meeting the top of the trailer, and rather than put something on the top of my tractor, I'd rather do a nose cone type deal on the trailer if it would help.
It will make a huge difference. Yeah, they design the nose cones. They have different styles and different sizes based on how much of that trailer is exposed up there. So talk to them. I would even take a picture of the truck and trailer hooked up and
mm-hmm.
send it to them, and they'll kind of advise you on which one you should put up there. But it will make a significant difference.
Do you have any idea at all on cost on a nose cone?
No, you know, I really don't. A year and a half or so ago, we were working with them, and we just got busy on other stuff, but I don't remember any of the pricing. But what I do remember is knowing that it was one of those things that was well worth the investment. The return on it was pretty quick.
Okay. Okay. Hey, can I ask you one other thing?
Sure, go ahead.
60 Series Detroit EGR. Here lately, it seems like when the weathers get cooler, I'm hearing this, like, whistling noise when I accelerate. And it'll last a few seconds, maybe as much as 10 seconds, and then it'll just phase out. I was wondering if you think that could be a charge air cooler loose possibly doing that.
It's more than likely a leak somewhere in between the air cleaner and the intake manifold, somewhere in there. Now, the 60 Series Detroits are notorious for leaking right at the intake manifold. And the traditional charge air cooler test won't catch that. So we actually like to do both, test the whole system all the way through. And we're now doing that with a smoke machine. Really simple, takes a couple minutes to hook it up. And just the other day, I was in the garage with Robert, and we hooked it up to a Series 60, and sure enough, the smoke just rolled out from behind the intake manifold. Sometimes it's actually a cracked manifold. Many times it's just a gasket. So get that in and get it checked. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com, and we're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Louisiana this time. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. My question for you was, I have an 05 Peterbilt 387, and I'm having some irregular tire wear on the front, and it's becoming a chronic problem. So my question for you is, like on my driver's side steer tire, it's a Yokohama, that one that you recommend with the low rolling resistance. I only put it on maybe 4 months ago, and it's starting to wear funny in the fact that as you look at each tread, some of them, they're starting to look like a roller coaster where some dip in and dip out, dip in and dip out, and then there's one spot about 6 inches that where it's starting to wear flat on that tire, starting on the outside edge and about 6 inches into the tire, it's starting to wear flat. And then on the passenger side tire, it's that one is not wearing that way. It's wearing to the fact to where the outside edge is starting to wear funny. Only the outside edge.
Yeah. It sounds like you've got what's called river wear on the right front side. And
okay.
And you've got multiple wear patterns showing up. It sounds to me like for sure we've got an alignment issue, but you
okay.
may have some other things going on. And without looking at the tire, I wouldn't even want to attempt this one because I think you've got multiple patterns which could indicate multiple problems. As far as addressing the tire wear issue, the first thing I would do is find one of the shops that uses MD alignment equipment and techniques. Do you get through Tennessee at all?
I do.
If you could stop into Truck City Service, they could certainly look at it. We could take some pictures of it if we can't figure it out, and we'll get Mike Beckett involved, and they could do the alignment there and then see what else might be going on with those tires.
Okay.
Now, as an overall strategy, when it comes to tire wear, what I've found over the years is that it's really easy to chase tire problems once they start. The one thing you don't want to do is replace the tires until we get the wear taken care of, until we diagnose what's causing it and fix that problem. don't change the tires. Many people think, oh, I better go get the tires and then I'll get an alignment. Problem is you just wiped out all the information we need to diagnose what's going on. So a good alignment shop needs to see the tires. And once a truck is aligned, changing tires won't affect it. So the order we like to do things in is diagnose the problem, fix the problem, then if we need to, change the tires. Because what the other thing that can happen is once that tire wear is bad enough that we can see it, if we can stand back away from the truck just a couple feet and see that tire wear, we can't reverse it. It's too late. Sometimes what can happen is we think, well, okay, we got it aligned, and the tire gets worse and worse. Well, maybe it wasn't aligned right. We go back and align it again, and sometimes we end up screwing it up. So if you can see that wear, it's too late. We need to fix the problem. The other thing I like to do, and I'd like to attack this all at once if we can afford to. We've got the tire wear problem. Get it diagnosed and get it aligned. Then if the tires are already worn where we don't think we can save them, we need to get tires on it after it's aligned. But I also like to do the True Balance wheel centering product to get everything centered, the Balance Master balancers, and shocks if they haven't been changed as well. And I know that can run into some significant investment in the beginning, but what I found is if we do all of that, your tire wear issues just go away. And then we can put steer tires on. We can run them to 150 and 200,000 miles. Handling improves, ride improves, and we actually get our money back out of our tires.
Right. That makes sense, yes. Do I have time to make one quick comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I was having a battery issue. Some guy called earlier about the problem with his system dying out or whatever, but I was having an issue. And the issue was, I replaced the batteries, then I was pulling my hair out because I thought it was the alternator. I thought it was other issues. Or it turned out one of the negative posts on one of the batteries had spun underneath the surface of the plastic, so you couldn't see it. So it wasn't making a good ground, and I could not figure out why I wasn't getting enough voltage. And luckily, a guy put a meter to it, and he had, and he was able to diagnose it and fix it, he was able to fix that. He had to replace the battery, of course, because once it spins the sealed battery, you have to just buy another one.
That's another good point about electrical system and batteries is that they really need to be maintained. And most shops, we say we're doing a PM, preventative maintenance. We really don't. We do an oil change. We swap out some filters. One of the things that we're really working hard on at Truck City Service is developing a true preventative maintenance program where you pull in, we test the systems, we inspect the truck, and we maintain the things the way they should be maintained. Another problem with electrical systems that's pretty simple to check is sometimes we have something in the system that's drawing constantly on the batteries. Clamp an ammeter on it, see if you've got any draw when everything's turned off, and if you do, you troubleshoot and find out where it's coming from and fix that, because it's that constant draw down and recharge that kills batteries, or lousy connections, or grounds that aren't clean. And we're going to start doing a lot more on the battery maintenance side. I've got a guest that's going to be coming on in the next couple weeks that is an absolute genius when it comes to electrical systems and batteries and that kind of stuff. So we are going to get more into that.
Okay, Kevin. Just before I go, are you on the mobile studio?
We are.
Okay. Are you going to be down? Are you in the south? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out maybe if I can run into you. I'm down here in Louisiana, running east towards Atlanta.
Yeah, we're actually right off of I-10, just west of Mobile and Theodore. It's exit 13. We're down at Bay RV and Fleet Air Filters. We'll be here this week, and then we're going to head up through Tuscaloosa and make a couple stops, and then I'm not sure. We haven't figured out the rest of our schedule yet.
Okay, Kevin, I won't take up any more of your time. Thanks for all your information. I really appreciate your show. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Tennessee. O'Neill, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks, Kevin. I'm trying to find some sources for financing APU. I'm trying to get an APU generator, and
okay.
I was just trying to get some sources to get the thing financed, and I was wondering if you could help me with that.
Have you, the whole idea behind an APU, something I've talked about a lot, is the first real important step is deciding which system makes sense for you and your operation. There's really a lot of things we need to think about. How often you need to use it, why you're using it, and how long you need to use it. I'm still not convinced that everybody who's buying a diesel-powered APU really should have a diesel-powered APU. I think there are some better solutions on the market. So have you done some thinking and looking at the different systems, and have you decided on what you're going to buy?
Yeah. The Willis version, which is they're based out in Nevada, but they're starting to expand to the east, and they have a pretty good setup. I got a 2000 Kenworth AeroCap Studio, and
okay.
I like this because it integrates into the system, the Kenworth system, in terms of with the air conditioning and heating itself. So
cost that you're looking at right now?
Installed, I was told, right at $9,700 installed.
Okay, let me do this. I've got to get to a break. I want to come back and give you some ideas. So stick with me. I'm going to come right back after the break. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. And right before the break, I was talking with O'Neill in Tennessee about APUs and some financing. So we're going to get right back to that call. O'Neill, are you still with me?
I'm still with you.
Okay. Once you've done, kind of your homework and you've decided on the system, there's a couple ways to look at financing. Usually the manufacturer or the dealer has some form of financing available, and that's usually the best place to start. Have you talked with them at all about that?
Well, I talked with the company Willis, and they gave me one source, which is out in Nebraska, a company called Tech Financing, and but I wanted to kind of shop around. I determined that the interest rates on the units themselves are a little bit high. So
okay.
I'm trying to shop around to see if I can get a different source that's a little bit more practical in terms of financing than that.
Got it. Okay. You know, in today's world, financing is a much different game than it was just a couple of years ago. Credit score is absolutely critical. And even with good scores, they're not financing things the way they were, you know, just a couple of years ago. But I'll give you another option that with a reasonable credit score, you've got a chance at getting much better terms. And this is pretty non-traditional. This is a fairly new way of raising money, but I really like the concept. And it's called peer-to-peer lending, P-E-E-R, peer-to-peer lending. And basically what it does is it gets rid of the middleman, which is the bank or the finance company. Now, traditionally what happens is people have money, so they put it in a bank. The bank has money, so they loan it to people who need money. And the bank makes money off of all the transactions. I'm fine with that, but if there's a better way, then I'd like to use it when I can. So what peer-to-peer lending does is it takes out the bank and just says, look, if there are people out there that have money and they'd like to make some money, you know, instead of putting it in the bank and earning 2% interest, let those people lend it directly to the people who need to borrow it, and they get a better return on their money, and the person borrowing gets a better rate because the bank isn't in the middle making any money. And it's managed virtually by the peer-to-peer lending company. And there are only a couple out there that are doing this. And the government, of course, is trying to regulate this more heavily. And I won't even get into the fact that the government's about to screw up another good thing. But it really works well. What happens is you go in and you put your needs up for bid. Like you say, all right, I need $10,000, and here's why. I'm in business as an owner-operator. I want to buy an APU. It lowers my cost by X number of dollars. And the application process is pretty simple. You don't have to tell the whole story. But then once you do that, then other people who come to that site that are lenders, and you can actually be both. You can be a lender and a borrower at the same time. But people who want to lend money and earn some interest on their money will look at that and they'll bid on it. And they'll bid on just parts of it. So it's not like one person is going to loan you the $10,000. It might be 30 people. So somebody might go in and say, hey, you know what? I'm willing to take a chance on $1,000 with that guy. So they'll bid on $1,000. And then once your loan has been filled, once enough people have bid to fill your $10,000 loan, then the website handles the transaction. The money goes into your account, and the payments will come out of that same account. So you set it up in a checking account, and they take the payments out, and then they send the money to everybody who bid on your loan. And I've simplified it just because we don't have a lot of time to explain it all, but it's a really cool system. So here's the best way to find out more about it is go to do a Google search for peer-to-peer lending, P-E-E-R, peer-to-peer lending, and you'll come up with the two or three companies that do this. The application process is really simple online. Check that out. That'll give you another option on this. Let's go to Illinois. Sean, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Kevin.
Good evening. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I called you back in July. I'm the one that had a head replaced on my truck at the company shop, and they screwed it up pretty bad. I had to take it to Detroit to get it fixed.
Yes, I remember.
Well, I appreciate your information on that. I finally did get justified on the expenses I had. They paid the complete repair minus the parts at Detroit, and I got them to fix an oil leak that they had left when they got done with the job, too.
Wow, that's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that.
So, yeah, pretty happy with that. Now the problem is I hit a deer last Thursday night, and I'm fighting with the insurance company. I have a Freightliner Century class, and it's red and pretty much set up like a CR England truck. It has the hand-done pinstriping on it.
Okay.
And both my front fenders and my front bumper sides are painted black. Well, the insurance company wants to fix the hood and the bumper and everything back to original, and they'll paint the fender black, but they won't touch any of the pinstriping or make sure that the bumpers, black bumpers match or anything. They just pretty much want to throw it together and say, there it is.
And this is your insurance company, correct?
Yes.
You know, you have to take the same approach with this as you do with the shops. The insurance company is there to keep claims down to a minimum, and that's, it's just the realities, but you've got to hold their feet to the fire on this. You have insurance so that you don't suffer losses, and the insurance company is supposed to make you whole. That's the term that they use, meaning that truck should be like it was before the accident. We shouldn't have to compromise. We shouldn't have to say, well, we're going to get this, but we're not going to get this. But what they'll do in the beginning is they'll try to do the minimum. And
okay,
you just have to stay right on them. And you say, no, that's not acceptable. And, you know, I can't promise you you're going to get this done, but they'll try to do the bare minimum in the beginning. And you basically have to negotiate this strongly. And even consider changing insurance companies if you're not satisfied. It's just like any other service. If we're not satisfied, we're not going to continue giving that company our money. But hold them to the fire on this and just tell them you need it. This truck should be the way it was before the accident. No compromise. Let's go to California. Jim, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
Well, I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening to you a bunch the last 9 months since I got into this industry, and I'm tempted to do what you hate the most, and that is lease a truck. The reason
okay.
I want to do it is not long-term. I don't want to own the truck. My plan is to do a couple, 2 or 3 years of experience over the road. I'm with a decent company, but the pay is very low for an entry-level guy. I'm 54 with a family. And I've been doing some research, and I found a company that has a decent program on a straight lease that I could walk away with and lose nothing. And I'll make an end up making about $350 or $400 more a week than I'm making now as a company driver. They run 500 horsepower D60s with 10 speeds. They're either a Century or a Cascadia or either a Peterbilt. I think they're 387s is what I've seen. And I think they're T800s. Kenworth is what I've seen. I'm kind of getting an idea of what fuel economy I can expect out of something like that.
Well, those specs are kind of all over the board. It's probably a T600, I would think, not a T8. But, you know, the difference between a Columbia Cascadia 387 and a T6, and that only tells us the body style. You did give me the engine and some of the other specs, but we could be anywhere from 5.5 to 7.5, which is a huge spread. There's a couple things here that concern me. One, you know, when I hear Cascadia, I know we're talking about new equipment. You know, they've only been out since about 08, and that's an expensive truck to get into and get your feet wet. I wish I had more time, but there's so many factors we'd have to cover here. As much as I talk about fuel economy being important, right now, it wouldn't be the thing that I would address. I would have to see so many other things in the lease. We're all out of time. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. Here on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.